Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. We should call this the Ken Lovett Show because it is. We love having him here. He knows more about politics and state politics than anybody I know. Welcome back, Ken.
It's good to be back.
So, Ken, let's start by asking you this. You got to picture this in your mind's eye. You got the governor standing up there in the middle of the circle. But around the circle, you got all these guys who are receiving subpoenas and being asked to come in, and we're being fed a certain amount of information about what all of this is about. And it doesn't look good, but the governor stands alone in the center of the circle, but all the guys around them are being sort of either rounded up or asked questions about their ethics or whether there's potential criminality. So how long does it take for him to be held responsible for the people who are around him?
Well, I mean, we start with the premise that no one around him has been charged with anything yet. I mean, we know that they're being investigated. We know his top aide and longtime friend and longtime Cuomo loyalist, going back to his father, former Governor Mario Cuomo, Joe Prococo, he's under investigation. We know that Todd Howe, a lobbyist who also goes back to the Mario Cuomo days and is close with the family or has been, that worked for Andrew Cuomo at HUD as a deputy chief of staff, we know he's under investigation.
And been fired from his law firm.
We know that Elaine Calieros, who heads up the SUNY Polytechnic, he's being looked at. And now, in a totally separate case, in Western New York, we know that Steve Pidgeon, who has ties to the governor, he really was a big advisor to him in Western New York politics. He's now not only under investigation, but Pidgeon has been actually charged in a bribery case involving a judge out in Western New York.
And hasn't the judge also come?
And the judge already pleaded guilty and is cooperating. And so it's, you know, it's an ugly mess. So you're right. There are people around him who are certainly under investigation, but those closest to him, you know, the Buffalo Billions, his signature upstate economic development project, which is being looked into, and the Howes and the Prococos, they haven't been charged with anything yet. So until and unless that happens, you know, I think he weathers that storm.
Well, Preet Bharara once told us to stay tuned when it came to indictments. And I think everybody in Albany has been staying tuned for a while. So what do we think is going on? Are the prosecutors talking to these guys, and there's been some very damning leaked information? Are they talking to these guys in a hope of getting a bigger fish?
Well, I think that's part of it. And I think I said this the last time I was on. We have no reason to believe at this point that Andrew Cuomo has done anything illegal.
Right.
However, if he had, Todd Howe, Joe Prococo, those are the guys who would know it. So certainly, if I'm a prosecutor, I would want to know what they know, and I would threaten, and I would cajole, and I would use everything in my arsenal to see what they know and to see whether or not it goes any higher. I mean, look, the governor is going to be damaged regardless if Prococo gets indicted, if how, you know, that's going to hurt him, but it may not impact him in terms of, you know, reaching to him directly. So, you know, we have to sit and wait. These things take time. And given the recent Supreme Court decisions, we have to wait and see. And I'm sure Preet Bharara and the other investigators are taking all these different court decisions into mind. And when they bring a case, they want to make sure it's airtight.
Yeah. The Supreme Court of the United States certainly had its say in saying you have to prove quid pro quo.
Yeah.
And you can't just sort of surmise it.
It is interesting. I want to say, you know, the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, is also under investigation, federal, state, and otherwise, on a host of issues. And to watch the difference between how he's handled it, which a lot of people say has been poorly, and how Cuomo's handled it. You know, Cuomo, for the most part, has distanced himself from a lot of the key people. And he's also said, look, if people have done wrongdoing, then they should be punished. And I'd be the first one to say, throw the book at them. Whereas de Blasio has been finger pointing and been on the defensive. And, you know, while defending people, you know, he's blaming the Cuomos for his troubles. He's blaming other people for his troubles.
Isn't that certainly possible? I mean, we know that Andrew, for some inexplicable reason, has been beating up de Blasio from day one. We just don't understand what that's all about.
Right. And there was a criminal referral from the State Board of Elections special chief investigation officer who was appointed by Cuomo. However, the investigation was picked up by the Manhattan District Attorney and the U.S. Attorney's offices, and they are not beholden in any means to Andrew Cuomo. So there was enough there to at least warrant an investigation. Mm-hmm. We don't know if there'll be charges.
Ken Lovett, let me go on to something else. We're going into the conventions. And we don't know who Donald Trump is going to pick. New Yorker Donald Trump is going to pick to be his vice presidential nominee as we speak right now. It may well have been disclosed by the time people hear this radio show. But speaking for Trump are names that have come out of the sort of fascinating playbook. One of them is Rudy Giuliani, the former America's mayor. And he's been saying things and been widely criticized. One thing is, I saved a lot more black lives than Black Lives Matter. So he's going after Black Lives Matter, you know, an organization which has been trying to say, hey, how come all these black people are being killed in their cars?
And Giuliani called Black Lives Matter racist, which is what started all of this. You know, it's what we're seeing now, which is at a time where you would like to see political leaders have cooler heads and try to tamp down the hostilities. You know, in certain segments, where including Giuliani, we're seeing it tamped up. You know, they're adding gasoline to the fire.
For a reason. In my opinion, and this is not Ken Lovett speaking, this is Alan Chartok speaking, he knows, Trump knows the demographic he needs to win, which is white unhappy men and sometimes white unhappy women. And there's been some new polling which has basically shown that. So rather than do the right thing and try to heal, he's saying, okay, exacerbation's going to get me those votes. I'm going
to
do it.
But ultimately, people are going to have to lead and have to unite at some point, you would think. And
well, I wouldn't think so. Not these guys. They want to get elected.
And this country, well, there's no doubt. And this country is in a very, very serious time right now. You know, probably we haven't seen it like this, so divisive since, what, the 60s?
Certainly. And I think this may be worse in a way.
It's certainly ugly right now. There's no doubt about that. I mean, with, you know, two people being shot execution style, some would argue, by the police, but then five police officers assassinated. I mean, I can't recall anything like this in my lifetime.
Nope. This is not good. So you got Giuliani. What do you think? What do you think that America's quote mayor does in New York State? I mean, Giuliani is not exactly, we always heard he was going to run for president, he didn't run for vice president, he didn't run for this, he didn't run for that. So is Giuliani really a force anymore?
What a lot of people forget about Giuliani was up until 9/11, he was in a horrible position within New York, and there's a lot of particularly Democrats and a lot of people in New York City who haven't forgotten that. There's no doubt he played a key role in the healing of New York post 9/11. And I think it actually was proven how important he was after 9/11 when you watch someone like Mike Bloomberg or even Andrew Cuomo, who don't have the same kind of way of dealing with the public one-on-one. They're more, I'm in charge and I will fix things. But that said, Giuliani was a laughingstock toward the end there. Before 9/11, his poll numbers were wrong. There were a lot of racial issues and a lot of racial divide in New York City.
Giuliani time, I remember.
Right, and so it's not surprising that this has bubbled up again. This is who he is. And, you know, he's always going to take the side of the cops that we saw as mayor. And it's who he is. Could he carry New York? Probably not. I'm not even sure he can carry New York City. It's a much different city demographically than what elected him. You don't really have the quote-unquote Archie Bunker conservatives out in Queens and the outer boroughs anymore. You know, it's a changing demographic. So I think it would be hard for Giuliani to carry this state. And if Trump is the head of the ticket, I think that makes it that much even harder.
You had an interesting story about outside income for state senators. And I'm wondering about that, you know, our presumption always has been that some of these senators were making out like bandits with second jobs. And if only six are declaring substantial outside income, then my question to you is, have we, and including me, because I've always been offended by this, that they don't limit outside income, which is a sort of way of legal bribery going on, but is six enough to make the impetus for change?
The indictment and convictions of two legislative leaders wasn't enough for the impetus of change. The ongoing investigations into Albany and New York City Hall was not an impetus for change in this past legislative session. People knew what these people were making last year. They knew it was an issue. So no, I don't see it changing. I just don't see a will right there, right now, in the legislature as constituted to take this up.
Okay, let's just go back, because I see that Dean Skelos, one of the guys you just referred to, is the leader of the Senate. He was tried and convicted along with his son for basically influence peddling. And now he's asking for a new trial. And I think he's basing his request on the Supreme Court case you were referring to earlier.
Yeah, there was a case out of Virginia where the former governor, McDonald, he was convicted on charges that he accepted bribes. He received a beautiful Rolex, and his wife received $20,000 worth of clothes and gave favors in exchange. But U.S. Supreme Court found that they didn't prove that the gifts were in exchange for the favors and that it impacted the work, the actual professional work. So they said they have to retry the case. Now, Skelos and the former speaker, Sheldon Silver, is going to make a similar argument, I'm sure, are facing... Years in jail, but they were supposed to report. So what Skelos did this week so far, and like I said, Silver's going to do it as well, is he asked for bail rather than having to report to prison so he can appeal on these grounds, that they're going to say that this case is similar to the grounds that they got convicted on, so I should be allowed to stay out of prison until, you know, a decision is made on the appeal.
Now, you've been talking, I'm sure, to legal scholars about their chances in all of this. The question is, are people thinking that they've got a chance after all of this, about trials, convictions, that they have a chance of either being exonerated or let off the hook?
I've heard both. I've heard people who said, yeah, especially Sheldon Silver, not as much Skelos, but I've heard some people say Skelos as well, have a real shot at getting a new trial and based on this Supreme Court decision. Others say that there was some trade-off. You know, Sheldon Silver did give grants to a doctor, state grants to a doctor that then sent clients to his law firm. Now the question will be, and again, I'm not a lawyer, so...
Was that a quid pro quo?
Was there a quid pro quo? The doctor testified at the time that there was never discussion of that. I just wanted to get on his good side. Well, can you blame a politician for someone saying, well, if I do this, I feel I'll get on his good side, if there wasn't a discussion about it? Skelos, meanwhile, same kind of thing. He did favors or seemingly passed legislation. And this may be why it's going to be harder for Skelos. They actually did pass legislation that helped outside interests who hired his son. So he did take what was known in the Supreme Court decision. He did take official action that benefited these companies that had hired his son. So well, that may be a tougher appeal.
Well, in the case of Silver, as I remember the case, you're much better at this than I am, Ken. The supposed agreement was, as you said already, we'll send you patients who will use your law firm, and in return, you will get me state grants. Aren't state grants official actions?
Yes, they would be if there was a deal cut.
Specific,
and that's going to be the question, because they never said, and a matter of fact, when the doctor was offered, you know, a plea, or he basically would not agree to say that there was a quid pro quo, that, you know, he never said that. He said, I did it because I thought I'd curry favor. And the truth is, he kept sending clients even after the money was pulled. So, you know, the grant stopped. So I think you know, Silver will have a, not a better, well, he'll have a better case probably than Skelos, who actually inserted stuff into the budget for, you know, companies that helped his son. But I think both are going to try to make the arguments that they fall under the Supreme Court decision. And what a blow to Preparara, perhaps, if he loses these convictions.
Well, let's talk about Trump for a change. Donald Trump obviously is a New Yorker, as is Hillary Clinton, but it's not even close in New York. Hillary Clinton's going to beat his pants off. So the question then is of demographic down ballot. So people are going to come in, they're going to say, I'm voting for Hillary, and in much larger numbers in New York than they're going to be voting for Donald. And while they're there, they may end up voting for state senators on the Democratic line or state assemblymen or congresspeople. We have a very interesting congressional race going on in upstate New York between the now famous Zephyr Teachout, best name in all of organized politics, and John Faso, a lobbyist and former minority leader in the state legislature, who does, I think it's fair to say, tone the sort of official Republican line. So Zephyr Teachout being seen as a sort of semi-left-wing candidate. What do you expect in something like that?
The Trump factor, I think it's going to be interesting because I agree. I think Hillary, the polls have shown that Trump right now has the standard 31% Republican vote. So I think Hillary Clinton ultimately will win big in New York. However, in cases in individual districts, that's where it's going to be interesting. So we have the Faso teach out race. That's going to be interesting to see whether or not the Republicans, and it has been a Republican district, it'll be interesting to see if the Republicans come out for Trump there. Where I think you're going to see it really have an impact is going to be on the fight for control of the state Senate, because Hillary is probably weakest in upstate, particularly Western New York, which is Carl Paladino's base. And she's shown some vulnerability in Long Island. Not that she would necessarily lose it, but what's going to happen is that's where the races are going to be hardest fought for state Senate, right, especially on Long Island. So if Trump can, you know, poll reasonably on Long Island, then the Republicans have a chance of keeping those seats. If not, I think you could see the Democrats easily take control.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Money counts. Money talks, all others walk. And we do know that the Republicans are far ahead of the Democrats in fundraising for control of the state Senate. In fact, you've written about that.
Yeah, the numbers come out, I believe, in a couple of days from when we're taping. It'll be at the end of the week and on Friday. And the Senate Republicans are expected to report having $3.4 million on hand. The Democrats, and that's for their two accounts, their two main accounts, and the Democrats will have $750,000. So there is a big difference. However, Republicans traditionally outraise the Democrats. There's going to be a couple of interesting things. One, it's a presidential year, and Democrats traditionally do better in a presidential year. And 4 years ago in 2012, the last presidential race, the Democrats had less money. They actually had a bigger gap, a bigger fundraising gap at this time of the cycle. They were $1.45 million in debt, and they had fewer incumbents. Let's not forget, the Democrats right now have more, have the majority. They just don't have control because of the six breakaway Democrats.
The men I call the traitors, under Jeff Klein from the Bronx. How does he get away with that anyway? How do you get away with being a Democrat from the Bronx, of all places, and coalescing with the Republicans? No, isn't that traitorousness?
It's a more conservative district, so his district is, so I don't think it impacts him as much. He's been there a long time, and and they haven't gone. You have Simcha Felder, who is a Democrat, who is actually sitting with the Republicans. The five breakaway Dems under Klein are just aligned with them and could, theoretically, if the Democrats pick up a seat or two or three in the coming elections, just change dance partners, so to speak, and align themselves back with the Democrats.
Yeah. And of course, into all of this, I hate to beat this horse again and again and again, but Andrew Cuomo has got to be seen as a part of this problem. In other words, if Andrew Cuomo says to those guys in the Bronx and other places that are selling out to the Republicans to make a certain kind of common cause, if he says to them, you gotta get back with the Democrats, they've got to do it, don't they?
You would think that would be an extreme amount of pressure, but he hasn't done that.
Well, because he wants a Republican.
He certainly has worked very closely with the Republicans. As a matter of fact, he's hired away two of their top aides. Earlier this year, he had hired Robert Mojica as his budget director. Mojica was Scalise's chief of staff. And this past week, they hired Kelly Cummings, the very highly regarded communications director, who is now going to be Cuomo's deputy chief of staff and special advisor.
Well, so, you know, if it looks like fish and smells like fish, it's a fish. Okay, so now Cuomo, for his part, is outdoing de Blasio in New York City in the polls. You've written about that, too. What's going on?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Both men are under... Their administrations are under investigation. Both have had a spate of bad headlines. But Cuomo has a 70% approval rating, personal approval rating in New York City. De Blasio, the last poll, was at 44%. I think De Blasio has just really had a series of self-inflicted missteps. And
but don't people always hate the mayor anyway? They go to the ball games, they get booed.
Yeah, but I think there's a couple things. One, the mayor... really dominates. You know, people sure. don't pay attention in New York City and downstate necessarily to the governor. Yeah. So any scandal is going to be much more. The scandals that have hit Cuomo's office have not gotten the same, haven't had the same resonance as the scandals that have hit de Blasio's office. Two, frankly, Cuomo's a better politician. De Blasio has made a series of missteps, and even those close to him have said that. And Cuomo has been able to, just has a different style that has resonated. And three, Cuomo has gone out of his way to undermine the mayor, and he's also gone out of his way to, in recent months, as these scandals have intensified, the governor has decided to promote other things that people would pay more attention to, whether it's the higher minimum wage or paid family leave. He's going around and really talking up these issues, breast cancer, heroin addiction. So he's banking that more people are interested in those kinds of things than they are these scandals.
So things are dead in Albany, aren't they? The governors, the list several governors, actually starting with Rockefeller, decided that New York City is really where they want to run their government from. So why not move the whole thing down to New York City?
Well, I would say starting with George Pataki, because Mario Cuomo spent a lot of time.
Well, he liked it up here. Yeah,
and he lived in the mansion. His family was here.
But not Rocky. Rocky
no.
liked the city, and then
no.
Pataki loved the city, and Cuomo was in the city all the time. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like...
You could argue that some of the, and I've had people say this to me, that some of the scandals, one of the reasons people are looking for more money, you know, Joe Prococo, the whole thing that what we do know about him is he needed more money. And you hear that all the time.
And that's the guy around, to remind everybody, that's the guy around Cuomo who has been his trusted chief aide.
Yes. And you hear all the time, people leave the administration, even if it's not under scandal, they leave for more money. And you know what? Maybe if the government was centered in Albany, which has a significantly lower cost of living, maybe they wouldn't have to leave for more money, because $180,000 or $170,000 would go much further than it does in Westchester and New York City.
But I think these guys don't want to be in Albany, to be honest.
No, they don't.
And then guys like Andrew Cuomo, like Willie Sutton, he goes where the money is.
But, you know, the argument can be made, this is the state capital. You don't want to live here, don't work for the state government. This is the state capital. This is where it is located. And so, you know, maybe if you were here, there would be more attention paid and money would be less of an issue. I know, that, like I said, that's been an argument made to me by several people.
Our guest has been the wonderful columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken, as always, thanks for making the effort and for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Always fun.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.